the decisions were made as they should be to make sure that we are on the air and ready to talk sports, pop culture, life, whatever comes our way. Because, yes, we have a football game currently ongoing, and I don't have a TV in my room. This is what's going to bother me is, oh, I don't think you have a TV. Noodles, no. I can almost see the reflection through the picture behind you. I can kind of see the ball game on behind you. So I know you're going to be distracted watching it.
I've got – you guys know I've got lots of TVs kind of in my setup here. All four of them that surround are on the game. Although I it's not that I'm going to be distracted, but, you know, it's – it is topical.
It's a football game on a Wednesday afternoon. It's the weirdest possible scheduling decision of all the scheduling mishaps or, I guess, unique scheduling scenarios we've dealt with in 2020. This would be close to the top of the list, I would think.
What we need, Hazy, is there's a guy behind the glass back at the studio, excuse me, named Al's brother. I think we throw to him with updates, and he can fill us in on what's going on. A little bit of an Al desk update.
Yeah, we might have to activate Al's brother because, you know, his go-to role at the station is pumping out updates and making sure everyone is informed.
Losing people money.
And losing money. And he is on the Steelers at minus 10, I believe. We locked that in yesterday. And I think they just went out by a touchdown. So I believe.
Yeah, they had pick six for sure.
A pick six, RG3 going the opposite way. But that's to be expected. I mean, the Ravens are so depleted. Lamar Jackson is not playing. But it's a Wednesday afternoon football game, so we'll keep our eye on that and make sure we know what's going on. And we've got a bunch of different things to get to today. Jerry's percentages at 5:30, and Gary, I understand, is kind of trying to get the message out and clear things up in terms of what's going on between the owners and the Players
Association. I don't know if we did a good job of that or not. Some of the comments today were a little bit, I don't know. What was the one, Noodles, where he's like, I don't think the players understand how much they actually owe us or something to that effect?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Gary's not great at, you know, for me, I think he's not great at, like, getting the message across without, like, coming across, like, just all business. You know what I mean? There's no finesse to it, put it that way. And he's basically saying, you know, they split the revenues 50-50. And, you know, if it went status quo, the players would be into escrow, you know, so deep. And I think he was just trying to say, you know what, like,
I think the crux of it makes a lot of sense. It's very simple.
I agree.
You split it 50-50. That's what it comes down to. 50-50 of zero is zero. 50-50 of 100 million means the players get 50 million dispersed amongst them all. It's not that difficult to figure out. And what I believe he's trying to suggest is, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what we were projecting. What we are looking at is the finite number we believe we're going to get to. Right. That said, they are also projecting because they don't know how much money they're going to make. They don't know what's going to happen over the next year or two or 4 or 5 or 6 years down the road in terms of where our society is. But at the end of the day, the way the deal works is it's 50-50. The players get 50% of whatever the league makes. And that is what he is trying to, I guess, get across, is that, yes, back in June, maybe we thought it was going to be this. Now we're looking at it and it's actually going to be that. So you may have thought it was 50-50 of 500 million. It's now going to be 50-50 of 400 million. So you're only getting the 200 million, you know, or whatever it is. Like that was basically how I read it. I'm with you. He's not very smooth. He doesn't try to make it sound as if – he always makes it sound as if the owners are so charitable and so easygoing, which is what is very aggravating for the average fan because they know that's just not factual at all. And they've locked out players and they've – killed the season before with a lockout that you guys were both a part of. But at the end of the day, with it being what it is, with the fact that they haven't come to a conclusion and then you're going to have to quarantine. I mean, no one believes this January 1st stuff.
No.
It's going to be later into January, if not into early February. But I think everyone understands they're going to play at some point. What's disappointing is we were hoping that we were a month away as opposed to 2 months away. And I think it's more likely we're 2 months away from seeing hockey again. Feels like a reality at this point.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. I think we're 2 months away yesterday. I think it's February 1st. And so that's 2 months. We're working backwards from 8 weeks. You're probably going to
When did they
need...
start, Jamie, the last lockout? When did that fire up?
I want to say
January 18th or 20th.
Yeah.
They got to kind of start around the middle of January if they want to finish 48 games in playoffs. I mean, that's
But they're February. Pushing it back, though. You got to remember, oh, they're willing to play into July. They didn't do that during the last lockouts. They were
all
done.
Of July?
No, up until the Olympics start. Like every other league, like they're willing to go into middle of July. The second the Olympics starts, the NHL is done, the NBA is done. They're not messing around with the Olympics.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's your timeline, which means, you know, back in 2012, 2013, I think they went a little bit deeper into June, but they weren't playing into July. This time they're willing to do that. So that gives them a little bit more time, and that's where we're going. And eventually it's going to happen. Both sides know that they have to play, and there's going to be some sort of an agreement at some point. And that's it. And once we start playing, then we can forget about the dollars and cents and CBA and negotiations and escrow and just start discussing what is going to happen once we see the puck drop. But that's where we're at. And it's not going to change anytime soon. And I mentioned the Jays connection to this in terms of a timeline. Ross Atkins is going to join us tomorrow. I believe he's talking to the media right now.
I'll be sitting that one out.
Well, we need you to be a part of that. You are a big part of the discussion here.
Mike is not joining. Mike.
I think it's awesome.
I hope for Ross's sake, although I really don't think it's going to happen. I hope for his sake he has fun with it, but I would assume he probably won't.
No.
But I think it would be in his best interest.
He only knows you. He does have no idea who me and Noodles are.
No.
I don't think he has any idea about our show. He's just a good guy. He's a baseball guy. He wants to do baseball stuff. He does this as an obligation, and I just don't want to get into it with him. Let's just do our show, ask the questions.
Well, we're not going to bring it up. You know,
no,
we're
not going to say, hey, remember when you said, hey, Mike? Like, we're not going there. I just don't know.
But it would be great if he did, is what I'm suggesting. If he came in and said, boys, great to be with you, Brian, Jamie, Mike, it would be an all-time great moment. An all-time great moment in the history of the show.
Do you think that Mark Shapiro, would go up to him and say, do you know that you called Jeff O'Neill? Like, just imagine this conversation. Shapiro saying to Atkins, do you know that you called Jeff O'Neill Mike instead of Jeff? It wouldn't resonate, buddy.
I don't think Shapiro could care any less.
It wouldn't happen. Like, nobody went up to Ross Atkins and said, hey, you know, like, I would guess, like, I'm kind of popular. People know who I am. And he called me Mike. But nobody.
And I'm kind of popular. Those are
like,
two
sayings.
Well,
people know who I am. In the city of Toronto, people know who I am.
Ross knows who you are.
He doesn't.
Yes,
and
he does.
I don't think anybody went up to Ross and said, do you know that you called Jeff O'Neill Mike? Because he just wouldn't care. He doesn't know who I am.
He knows who you are. I'm sure he's
Why are you
well
saying
aware.
That, Hayes?
Because he's been on this show countless times before.
I know, but he only knows you, you moron. He doesn't know me and Noodles. We're Mike and Steve to him.
No, he never called Noodles Steve. He knows that it's Jamie Noodles McLennan. He was a big fan when he was on the island and in Minnesota, I believe.
You're a loser. Nobody said to Ross Atkins, do you know that you called that guy Mike?
That's fine. Okay. I don't know if he did or not, but I hope that someone has or he picked up on it himself and hopefully rolls in tomorrow and calls you Mike. It'd be hilarious.
I think it would be brilliant. And you know what? Why not? Like right now, it's the off season. Have a little fun.
All right,
like,
can I call him Glenn? Can I say Glenn?
No, that's disrespectful.
Of course not.
That's disrespectful. Okay.
That part is disrespectful because you know his name and he's a guest on your show. Him coming on our show and him having a mistake, like just simply a mistake. He probably did 10 interviews that day.
See,
and for some reason in his
Hayes
mind.
He thinks it would be funny if he called me Mike again. I'll call him Rick instead of
I
Ross.
I think it would be awesome because I think Hayes' point, and I agree with him, Hayes' point is for him to double down would just be tongue-in-cheek. Be like, sorry, last time I asked a slip of tongue. And I guarantee you, is it Griff? Like somebody at PR would have been like, hey, just so you know, like it was a slip of the tongue last time you called me.
My point is, Jamie, it wouldn't resonate. He would just say, I don't know who Mike or Jeff is anyway, so it doesn't matter to me.
Well,
so
regardless, he's coming on tomorrow. Ross Atkins will be on tomorrow.
Rick Atkins.
We'll get into the upcoming offseason with him and see what he's got in store because the Jays are rumored to be connected to everybody available. Everybody. Yeah. We'll ask them if they're going to acquire Mike Trout because I'm sure somewhere – out there on the internet, they are connected to Mike Trout, even though I don't think Mike is up for grabs. Although it could be. Maybe it's Jeff Trout. We should start calling every Mike Jeff and every Jeff Mike.
That would be hilarious.
That if I asked him tomorrow, what about Jeff Trout out with the Angels? How do you feel about his game overall? You think he's underrated, overrated? So we'll catch up with Ross tomorrow. We're getting into some more baseball talk later in the hour. There's the football game currently ongoing. We've got a lot of NBA stuff to get to as well. But speaking of hockey, like the 25th anniversary of the Patrick Waugh getting shelled and demanding out is currently ongoing. In Montreal, they're buzzing about it. I saw a lot of people in Montreal. This is like the biggest day of the year for them in terms of just commemoration and looking back, because that kind of was the beginning of the end of just a remarkable era where the Habs have not won a cup since 93. They're not alone. No other Canadian team has won a cup, as we know.
Right.
But they have 24 cups lifetime. That was 2 years after he had won them a cup, or won a cup with them in 93. And ever since then, they've just become, yeah, they're just a team. You know, the Habs are just a team with an incredible history. But that kind of was the beginning of the end of a remarkable run for Montreal.
I got to be honest, I hated everything about it. Like, first and foremost, I think it's gutless to leave a goaltender in for 9 goals, especially Patrick Waugh. Like, that was an ego play by Mario Tremblay. And, you know, obviously him and Patrick didn't see eye to eye. So there was one thing. But it was cringeworthy. And then the fans, you know, jeering him and Bronx cheering
him. Little
did
they know. That would be the interview for the day, is to get someone on that was in the building, because I think they would have been still at the Forum at that point.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah,
they were at the Bell Center. Thinking, no, hey, this is so fun. We're goofing on Patrick Waugh. Then the next day you're like, oh, my God, he's out. He's demanded out. What did I do?
We've talked about this a million times on our show, and this was the ultimate. The ultimate Scrabble face was Corey's face after he went and sat down, because he put his finger on his temple and he was like, oh my God, Waugh wants out. I want to strangle Tremblay. And he doesn't know how to decipher all of those emotions in 5 split seconds.
Yeah,
because that's all happening in his brain at one time. Because Waugh just went, rocked up to him and said, I'm out of here. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's the most incredible. It was such a great camera job, too, right?
Like, oh, the director in the face booth on him was just incredible.
Getting that shot, though. Imagine you missed that. Like, that is such a massive moment in sports history in this country. Watching him walk past the coach, go up to the GM or president and say, I'm out. It was incredible TV.
But you can never do it in today's world because the president doesn't sit behind the bench.
Exactly.
With like, no glass.
With no glass. Like, I hated, I know, and I, again, I'm in the minority when it comes to this. I hated the Maple Leaf Gardens for that. I hated the Bell Center or,
That was the Forum. Yeah, they were still
the Forum before that because I always believe there should be a separation between the fans and the players during the game. Because they would hear us yell and swear. They would hear things that they probably didn't want, and vice versa. You just want to be able to relax and play.
The horse eye on Tremblay on Patrick Waugh, too, is going both ways. Right eyeball on the way by, and then left eyeball on Waugh on the way back to his seat.
See, I hear what you're saying, Noodles, but for a guy like myself on the outside looking in, I pine for that opportunity now. The idea of Shanahan sitting behind the bench when David Ayres is rolling out there would have been the greatest TV in Toronto sports history.
You're right.
Shanny behind the bench, his head exploding, while David Ayres is kick-saving a beauty to take a win away from the Leafs. Imagine him standing behind the bench. Imagine watching Shanahan every time they threw the Leafs bench, or Dubas, or whoever it was.
Hayes, don't you think that TV has gotten a lot, like, the idea of going to the GM or the president, it's a lot more prevalent now in the broadcast, wouldn't you say?
Yes, it is. They know where they are and they find them, yeah.
Right.
I think it's a big part of broadcast, especially when things are tight and there's a lot of criticism and there's a lot of heat in a particular market. They pan to that person more than ever.
Yeah.
They
but
do,
I mean,
and I don't know if that's a direct result of what happened 25 years ago at the Forum, but it wouldn't surprise me because all of their faces, all of their moods, it was just wild. And,
right,
you know, as someone else pointed out today, it was also kind of the beginning of a new era in Detroit. Like, it was the Red Wings basically saying, look out, like, this is our league now. It's like the passing of the baton. The Habs had owned it for so long, and then Detroit was about to take over.
You're right, but here's another thing. Like, go back in history and say that, like, say Patrick Roy, that doesn't happen that night. There's no guarantee he ends up in Colorado and Colorado wins cups.
Right.
Like, they may have had to go in a different direction to acquire a goaltender. Like, there's, you know, it could have changed the course of history on a lot of different fronts, not just the Montreal Canadiens, but the Colorado Avalanche. They were recipients of an elite goaltender who wanted the hell out of Montreal because of that. And I'm sure there were other things. I don't know.
There
the
had to be
story.
A build-up to it, right?
Right.
Like, you're
right.
Not just out of nowhere saying I'm out and demand out, and then it actually happens.
Well, and the fact that, there is more to it. Like, Pierre Lacroix was an agent who became a manager, and then I think he's close with Patrick or either represented him and was like, oh, by the way,
we're running things in Colorado here.
You can come down to Colorado now. So it may have worked out anyways, but you just look at how things unfolded that night, and then fast forward, Colorado had a pretty good run there on the back of Patrick, too.
They won the next year, right? His first complete year, they win.
Exactly.
And they won in 96-01, I believe, and they were a pillar of success for a long time. That's what they needed to put them over the top. They had everything else.
Yeah.
And, it's just one of those uniquely, you know, 90s and before moment where you can have the coach, the goalie, the president, all within 15 feet of each other.
And during a game, like
during
in a heated moment, too. Like, you're right, actually, Brian. Like, I should retract my – as a player, I hated it.
I get
as
it.
As a media member and a fan,
it's the greatest.
I want that theater right there. Could you imagine, even as a player, coming off the ice and you've had a crappy shift or you're a goaltender, he's gotten pulled, and you got to lock eyes with the guy who's signing your check.
Oh, imagine you came to the bench and Fergie was sitting behind the bench. What would your Scrabble face look like?
What I want you to do is fast forward. Let's pretend in 2017 you're in Ottawa and there's no glass behind the bench. And the guy with the mustache that looks exactly like the coach is back behind there. And goalie walks up to him and thinks it's the coach and just starts absolutely tearing a strip off him and says, I'll never play for you again, you piece of bleeping garbage, and then realizes it's not the coach. That would be my favorite.
That would have a lot of potential. And I think we need to advocate for it. These management types, man, they've got it way too nice now. Way too nice in the luxury suite. They're out of sight, out of mind. They've got everything catered. They should be forced to sit right behind the bench. Right behind the bench with all the fans and deal with it and get a real true
read
on what's going
on. It would never happen. It would never happen.
Oh, of course, it's never going backwards now. Never going backwards. But that is – it's just – it's a perfect storm of – leaving Waugh in there for 9 goals, which is outrageous for a guy who had already won you 2 cups and was the best goalie in the game, to leave him in there for 9. All the fans think that they're just having a fun time by giving him the Bronx cheer. Little do they know they're never going to see him again.
Yeah.
And, the fact that the coach obviously is on the bench, but the president's sitting right behind at the Forum. It's just remarkable TV. Like an incredible moment in sports history. And to your point, Noodles, a true domino effect on a lot of different things, including the Habs just kind of losing what they had, which maybe was going to happen anyway, right, because of the explosion of expansion and a lot of different factors go into it. And the Habs have still had good teams to very good teams over the years. They've gone up and down. But that was less than 2 years after they won a Stanley Cup. And then Waugh's out, and it's like, okay, I guess we're moving in a completely different direction. And they did, and they're still searching to get back there, like every other Canadian team.
What a crazy moment. Like, I can't even imagine because, like, that's not, you know, that's not a mid-level player walking up to the president.
No, that's the
arguably
king of the
greatest.
City.
It's arguably the greatest goaltender, arguably one of the greatest goaltenders who ever played the game. Like a star, like you're right, key to the city, you name it. And like that's Austin Matthews walking up to Chani.
It's bigger than that, though.
Well, you're right.
He won 2 cups.
You're right, but I'm saying.
86 and 93. You're, in terms of being the man, absolutely.
In terms of being the man.
But he was French-Canadian. Like it just, everything about it, I think, I don't even think we can put it into perspective.
In today's world, like that's McDavid walking up to Bob Nicholson.
I guess. I think it's Crosby. You know,
yeah,
it's
you're right.
It's bigger than that. McDavid hasn't won anything. Like, it's just Patrick Waugh, St. Patrick. That was his name. He was a god in that city.
You're
a
right.
God.
It's Ovechkin. It's Ovechkin going up to Leonis.
And saying, I'm out of here. Like, I've been benched for the third, and I'm not doing this again. And then actually having his wish activated, and he's sent out and doesn't play again. We'll get into this later with James Duffy just after 5. Ray Ferraro coming up into the 6 p.m. hour. Jerry's percentages in just over an hour. And some big NBA news out there, too. A signing for LeBron. And what does that mean for Anthony Davis and his Lakers legacy? A couple of really intriguing comments about Giannis from Giannis about who he'd want to play with, how he feels about certain guys in the league, including one here in Toronto with the Raptors. And the Christmas schedule is out. Opening night schedule is out. We'll tell you about that. We'll get into it more later in the hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. The ball game is currently ongoing. Pittsburgh at home to Baltimore. And we'll try to keep you up to date on all of that.
Yeah, it's been terrible from what I can see. Like pickoffs and like turnovers and just a disaster. Both teams look disorganized.
Well, as you would expect, right? Like they're all both dealing with COVID. They're both dealing with weird schedules. It's Wednesday at 3:40. You guys always talk about it. Athletes and body clocks.
Yeah.
I'll bet you these guys have never played a Wednesday game in their life.
I loved it,
Wednesday
hazy.
At 3:40.
Do you know why? Because you could get up super early, feed, a different kind of feed because I couldn't eat pasta with red sauce at 7 in the morning, massive pancakes and eggs, and then go back for your nap right away at 8 and then go to the rink. I loved it. Just so, like you would force yourself to wake up early, have your pregame meal, then go back to bed, and then it's just go time.
Yeah,
go time.
I hated it. Like, I hated afternoon games, and I hated – because I used to eat pasta regardless, unless I would just have cereal and toast. But, like, Pierre Turgeon, you remember that name? I played with him. He would have pasta at 7 o'clock in the morning. Pasta, and he used to have – instead of tomato sauce, he would have tomato juice. So pasta and tomato juice on it, and that was his pregame at 7 o'clock in the morning for –
But
you
know, I guess if you're a creature of habit, right? If you're
right.
A creature
I was.
Of habit,
I ate
that's
the
what
same
you have
thing.
To do.
Pasta, chicken breast cut up with tomato sauce or a meat sauce every single day for 820 times. But morning games, I'm like, I can't eat spaghetti at 7 o'clock in the morning.
No, you cannot. You just can't do it, but that's the kind of thing. If you feel off or you have a poor game, you're going to blame it on that.
Yeah.
You're all about, you know, superstition and what may have happened or what should have happened. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Steelers and Ravens are both dealing with that right now. Wednesday at 4 o'clock. Who the hell plays football at Wednesday at 4:30 in the afternoon? These two teams do in the era of COVID. And we'll keep you up to date on that. Ross Atkins will join us tomorrow. The Jays have really not done anything yet, but it feels like they're on the verge of it. And to chat about that, amongst some other things around baseball, we're joined now by former MLB and MLB Network radio host Ryan Spielborgs. How you doing, Ryan?
Okay.
All right, then.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we'll leave it there.
leave
cats' heads are falling off.
That's tough. I did a phoner today with Vancouver Radio, and I was having – I don't know if you guys heard, right in the 4 o'clock hour, right in the first segment, I've got my home phone plugged in. Did you hear it ringing?
Oh, I heard it ringing. I was wondering which one it was.
By the way, who the hell has a home? What do you need a home phone? You're
the
only person I know that has a home. Do you have one, Hayes?
No, I don't have one.
No one does. No one has a home.
They make you have a home phone when you sign up, like when you sign up for whatever.
No, they don't make you activate it.
Sign up for what?
You're right, Noodles. I technically have a number assigned to my house, I guess, or my account, but I don't have a home line. I don't use it. I don't have a phone. So I guess you're right. Technically, we have one, but
I use it once a week when I have to do phoners throughout the country because I don't want to be on a sell and drop. So I plug it in and use it. But what happens is telemarketers or something have the number because I answered it one time. The phone was ringing and ringing. I'm like, what the hell? And this guy was screaming and swearing at me saying, you've been crank calling me. I'm like, I don't even use this number. I don't even know the number. Like, I don't know it. Like, and apparently, like, it's.
So your number's being used in some telemarketing scheme? Is that what you're claiming?
I'm sure. And I called my carrier, and they've done nothing about it.
So. No, of course not. That, I'm sure that's a high priority for them. All right, I think exactly. We have Ryan Spielborg's back. Are you with us, Ryan?
I am here, and I'm sorry, I probably should have used a landline so I don't drop a call.
Yeah, it's 2020. How dare you not have a landline, like 90% of people. Like, nobody has a landline. It's just something that no one cares to have, except for one of us. Yeah. Noodles, you have it, and the phone was ringing off the hook earlier in the hour. Anyway, it's good to have you, and we're looking forward to something happening here in baseball. What's your timeline on that, the levy breaking and some of these big names finally either signing or getting traded?
Well, I mean, today is a pretty big day in baseball. You have what's called the non-tender deadline, and basically, as you guys are aware, with hockey or with anything, you have to tender a contract to a player for them to be eligible for your roster. And with Major League Baseball, today's deadline is for arbitration-eligible players. So if you've been in the league long enough, you start going through the process of which is called arbitration. Arbitration allows you to negotiate your contract at a much higher level than your first 3 years when you're making league minimum. So as players in Major League Baseball goes, majority of a player's career is spent making league minimum. In fact, if you look at the numbers, the average length of a major league career is 2.5 years, which, you know, falls right in line with arbitration. So once you start getting into this tender period where you're making, you know, a little bit more money than normal, the first 2 years are usually where guys, you know, they'll continue to do arbitration, but year two and three, and certainly year three, because you got a year to go before free agency and the cost goes up, is when you start seeing really good players get non-tendered. And so you might see this with the Travis Shaw. You might see it with some guys that you expect, household names, but they get non-tendered because the organization doesn't want to pay top dollar for an aging veteran. And so today's a pretty big day. There's already been some pretty big names out there. So that's one of the first dominoes that starts. The other one is, and maybe you guys know more than I do, will there be a universal DH in 2021? So that has not been resolved, and once that does, I think more teams will get engaged with free agency, and you'll start seeing position players go. Pitching, it doesn't matter, but for the position players, this DH thing has to get resolved before that starts moving.
Speaking of pitching, we were talking yesterday about Trevor Bauer. What are your thoughts on bringing him into the clubhouse? I mentioned on yesterday's show, as long as he's performing, you can put up with a certain amount. I actually kind of like the idea, because if you have a clubhouse full of nice guys that don't really get the job done and aren't talented enough, then it doesn't really mean a whole lot. So I think he could mix it up and be a nice kind of mix in the clubhouse. What are your thoughts on bringing him in there? Not that we're talking about hypotheticals connecting him with the Jays, but just the idea of bringing Trevor Bauer into the clubhouse.
Yeah, I mean, if you've ever talked to Trevor, whatever negative criticism or things that you've heard, I think they get dispelled pretty quickly. He's just different in a good way. You know, he's engaging. He comes from a different background. You know, he has an engineering mindset. You know, he's not the traditional jock. And so I like that. And you're right. Like, you're better off when you have, almost like a collected group of individuals in a clubhouse, because it creates a different kind of bond, you know, like, yeah. It's not, you know, when everybody shares the same religion or shares the same music taste, you know, it tends to be bland. When you have people of different backgrounds, different thoughts, you know, different ways of doing things, it makes your team better. It engages in conversation. And certainly, you're talking about somebody that just won a Cy Young, that looks like he's getting better. And because he's embraced the analytics of our game, what's been strange about it is he's been ahead of the curve. You know, the personality that Trevor has, 5 years from now, people are going to be more like Trevor than Trevor is right now. So I think there's a lot of just misinformation, miscalculations, and people that don't understand the personality or the person and what it means to a clubhouse dynamic, but they shy away because they don't know. I think the more you dig in, the more you realize that Trevor is a great fit for any ball club. It now just boils down to me, performance and finance.
We're chatting with Ryan Spielborg's former MLBer from MLB Network Radio ahead of what is supposed to be a very active offseason, especially here in Toronto. And it sounds as if the Jays are linked to a number of potential infield options. They'd like to speak with LeMahieu. They may be interested in Lindor, maybe Colton Wong, who is available via free agency, maybe other trades that could be available. And we keep coming back to Bo Bichette, who Bichette, you know, is a burgeoning star. Defensively, he's, I think, mediocre at this point, but I believe he's got the work ethic to continue to improve in that. And he wants to play short. He made it very clear. He told us on this show a couple of weeks ago, he wants to play short. And as far as he knows, the Jays want him to play short. But with all these rumors out there, you know, maybe it's possible they move him around. Where do you stand on Bichette as a shortstop, you know, permanently into the future and building around him up here in Toronto?
I think I've seen enough from him that I believe he can improve quite a bit. I'll give you a good example of another shortstop in the big leagues that has dramatically improved his defenses. That was Marcus Semien of the Oakland A's, who's now a free agent. You know, this is a guy that, if you look at Marcus Semien's track record, he made 29 errors 4 years ago, and just last year was a finalist for a Gold Glove. So you can stay in that premium position and improve. It's not like you'll always get better. Nick Ahmed, who is considered one of the best defensive shortstops in all of baseball, slowly improved. And he wasn't a Gold Glove caliber shortstop at first, and he got better and better and better. I think with Bo Bichette, what's interesting about him, I think he can stick in that position. But I'm also, I mean, if you have an opportunity to land Francisco Lindor, don't kid yourself. Bichette would make a great third baseman.
Right.
He could also play second base. I think players, you know, there's been plenty of examples of players moving off of their primary position mentally to a position that makes them a better player. Manny Machado was a shortstop. Where is he playing now? Plays third. You know, you can go back and look at all kinds of different versions in baseball's history of shortstops moving to a corner or to a different spot to make their team better. I think Bo will do the exact same thing. If it was up to me, and I have the opportunity to land a Francisco Lindor, and I know I'm going to have him for multi years, then you know that I would be happy to move Bichette. If that's not an opportunity, I would just continue to tell him you play shortstop and we're going to keep working on it with you, and you're going to improve and you're going to be a Gold Glover one day. And then we'll make sure we supplement guys around you like a Colton Wong, who at second base, I don't think there's a better defensive second baseman athletically than Colton Wong. He's not DJ LeMahieu. LeMahieu's a much better player all the way around, but I don't think DJ's leaving New York. I think Colton Wong is a great middle infield opportunity for the Toronto Blue Jays if they're not able to land a bigger name in Francisco Lindor. But if you're not landing that guy, you know, for Bo Bichette, I would just encourage him to keep working hard and to put your confidence in him to play that position, because he can do it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the one, there's a couple of positions of need up here. I mean, defensively, the Jays are very underwhelming. They're a bottom third defensive team in the league in terms of fundamentals. A lot of that is based on youth. But for years, they had Kevin Pillar in center, and that masked a lot of issues defensively when balls were hit into the outfield. And by all accounts, again, based on reports, they are after George Springer and willing to offer him a lot of money. Now, the Mets are in on that, too. We know the Mets are willing to spend this summer, or this offseason, I should say. But George Springer, 31, he's got his World Series. He's put up his numbers. He's got his credentials. How do you feel about his game overall, you know, looking forward and forecasting the next 3 or 4 years, because you know it's going to be a longer-term deal? And how quality of a fit would he be if the Blue Jays can find a way to sign George Springer?
I like George Springer a lot. If you know anything about him, his background, he's a very special human. You know, he comes from the East Coast. You know, what he means for a small community of people with speech impediments. He's a very good voice for them. And I think when you're looking at a player like that who has a track record in the postseason, those guys that have done it, that have won, regardless of how you look at 2017, I don't look at it the same way. But regardless, he has a track record of being a stand-up, great teammate, and he's good. He's a good baseball player. Defensively at 31, center field, how many years can he remain, you know, a viable center field option? I think at least a handful of years. If it's a five-year deal, I wouldn't expect him to man center field the entire time. And when you're looking at the Blue Jays, you know, realistically, where do you think this group is in terms of their window and competitive, you know, ability to sustain it? I think you're right in the middle of it. I think last year was a really good learning experience. They learned a lot from the youth side, just how important it is to put the ball in play and to make good quality defensive plays. That it exposed, hopefully, to this young group what they need to work on. You don't learn any of this stuff unless you get the playoffs and lose. So, you know, they have the pieces and parts ready to go. Now it's just almost having somebody that's done it that can calm the ship and lead by example would go a very, very long way. And Springer certainly fits that mold.
Yep. Well, we'll see. There's a lot of rumors out there, but until they actually ink the deal, that's all it is. And I think the Jays are ambitious to make things happen and splash some money around, but takes two to tango. So we'll see what happens over the next month, month and a half. Really appreciate the insight. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you, Ryan.
Bye, you guys. Thanks for having me on.
There he is, Ryan Spielborgs from MLB Network Radio.
I almost asked the question for, I think I've been doing this for 7 years now, and I think I asked the same question with baseball. Why is open season in baseball so slow moving, so slow to develop? Yeah. It's like Trevor Bauer is one of the elite pitchers in baseball. Why isn't he gone right now? Like gone. Off the market. George Springer, same thing. Day one.
Yeah, a lot of it is that teams are terrified to set the market and drastically overpay and then find out later, you offered $30 million more than any other team. So a lot of it is the teams are scared. And a lot of times these agents like Scott Boras, they guarantee a certain amount of cash for their players and they hold on basically until they get it. So I think it goes both ways. It's like both sides have blood on their hands. Where take Trevor Bauer, for instance. He may have been guaranteed a contract worth $250 million, you know, whatever it is. Right. He's not signing now for $180 because that's the only thing on the table. You know, he's holding on until he gets closer to $250, knowing that $180 is still going to be there in a month and a half. So that's a big part of it. It's a game of chicken on both sides, and teams are terrified to overspend. Oh, like terrified.
That money is so big, though. Like, you know, the NBA is throwing around cash like nothing, but Major League Baseball's done that for years.
Yeah, they've done it even larger. Like, nothing comes close. Outside, I guess the Mahomes deal does, but there's no limit on that. They can sign for as long as they want in the NFL. You can't do that in the NBA. There are limitations on term.
Harper, like, remember, what was Harper originally looking for? 300, was it?
400.
Yeah, he wanted 400. He signed. He I guess accepted 330. I think it was in the end.
But it was 13.
I don't think the Phillies are too happy. I think that summer Machado and Bryce Harper went, and I think if you ask Philly, they're looking at their team saying we're still garbage, and I think if you talk to San Diego signing Machado, they're thinking if this guy can put us in the playoffs with what they have now. With Tatis Jr. there, if he can be a part of the solution, get this team in the playoffs regularly for the next 5 to 6 years, maybe saying maybe this guy's worth it. But the Phillies got to be thinking, why did we do that?
They're losing their minds because a lot of it, remember, it was how many jerseys they sold immediately. The ticket sales were through the roof. Well, now no one's showing up to watch, right? Like this past year, you couldn't sell a ticket. No one's buying jerseys right now. And next year, you're probably not selling tickets either, at least not off the hop. And it sounds as if Philly might be going the other way. You know, like they're going to let guys walk and they're putting guys on the market that might be available.
Crazy.
And Harper's stuck and they're stuck with him. And it didn't take long for that to happen. And when he walked, who ends up winning a World Series? His former team.
Yeah.
The Nationals go to the World Series and win it without him.
I've lived that, man. The year I left, Carolina won the cup. That's not fun. Not fun. You know how many people ask me, where's your cup ring? It's like, come on.
Yeah, but
that would stink. That's just such a gutless comment. Like, did they?
Well,
do
they
that
don't
from
know. They're like, oh,
they
connect you with Carolina. They're right. Like, man, yeah. Like, I even did. I did something for somebody the other day, and it was for my friends back in Guelph. They were just doing kind of a Q&A for my old high school, and I saw on the questionnaire, and I just prayed that he didn't get to it. It said, you know, Carolina Stanley Cup championship, and I'm like, I don't want to have to tell this guy. I did not win a cup. I did not win a cup.
Did he get to it or no?
No, he did, but he's like just playing Detroit, and he never got to the 06 Cup, and I'm glad because I didn't want to have to say, look,
yeah,
man, I didn't win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, and that you understand. I mean, not everyone knows exactly, you know, your timeline for your career.
Or my name.
Yeah, or your name.
Well,
Mike, don't know your name.
Refresh, were you traded out of Carolina, or did you leave as a free agent?
I just got traded, yeah. It was a long summer. My brother had passed away, and I just said to Jimmy Rutherford, look, if I can't play in Toronto, I'm not playing, period. So you can do what you want with it.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
So he did me a favor, traded me to Toronto, and the rest is history.
That's right, yeah.
And that was coming out of the
lockout,
too. I
couldn't remember if you were unrestricted. Yeah. I couldn't remember if you were unrestricted or not. That's why I didn't. I knew you ended up in Toronto. I just didn't know if it was a trade or if it was a free agent signing.
So there's a perfect example. How's the principal at Guelph High going to know about things when Noodles can't even recall the exact timeline of, you know, all of your careers? I mean, that's what happens, I guess, over time. But I hear what you're saying. Like, well, of course. But at least you get to play in a cup final.
Yeah, try playing in six organizations. Like, that's, you know, a lot different where people are like, how did you leave there? What happened there? Like, that's ultimately, you know, well,
hey, at least you guys made it. I mean, it could be a lot worse, right? You guys were there.
That's true.
Duthie coming up in 20 minutes. Jerry's percentages at 5:30. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. And I was watching the Golf Channel today, and you don't really see a lot of controversy in the golf world. But your boy Tom Weisskopf, you see him basically call out Rory McIlroy?
Dude, all of them have. Steve Elkington has. A lot of former guys play because they all say the same thing, Brian. He's content. He's got all the money in the world. He's one of the top golfers, whether he likes it or not, tries hard or not. And they just think that he goes out there. And I can kind of see it, too. It's like, do you see any kind of, like, Dustin Johnson, when he's teeing it up, and Bryson DeChambeau, they look like they had a mean on. Like, I got to win this tournament. I want to win this tournament. And Rory thinks that snapping his club at the Zozo Championship is like, it's just, he looks like he's just floating around out there. It's hard to say in the golf world, but I get it.
Well,
I know why they say that.
I get it as well based on talent. I mean, what Weisskopf said was that he doesn't see a lot of determination and will to be the best.
I see the same.
Yeah, and most people that look at McIlroy, now he is top 10 in the world. I believe he's still in the top 10, and he's still, you know, he won the Canadian Open a year and a half ago. He has won tournaments. It's not like he has not won anything in 5 or 6 years and is just hanging on to his tour card. He's not Tin Cup. But he is as smooth and as put together of a golfer as you could possibly find. Yet he just never seems to have that edge. I'm with you. In terms of him just being dialed in and locked in, you just don't really see it.
No, and I think that guy, the way these guys hit it is incredible. But he still makes 85% of the guys on the range stop and watch him hit drivers. He hits it that good.
It's as like smooth of a swing.
He's 5'10", 175 pounds and ripped, and he hits it 340 on the fly.
Yep.
Crushes the golf ball, and he makes guys stop and look at it. But he just can't seem to put it all together. I mean, who cares that he came back and turned around his Masters? His first two rounds, he looked like you out there. He was awful.
Well, and that's a part of his attitude, is he's always kind of talking to himself and kind of feels like he's almost like, oh, that's so bad. Like, what am I doing out here? It's like, it doesn't seem as if he's dialed in.
People just say to themselves, rip it 340 and hit a wedge and make a birdie like Dustin Johnson does.
Yeah, but Dustin Johnson is so dialed in right now. It's, you know, it's easy to point to that, but he's also aloof a lot of times as well. He doesn't come off as a guy who is
not on the course.
Not on the course. He's not, and not necessarily, but he and his brother have goofed around and had the wrong yardage and laughed it off before. You know, the thing is, Tiger set forth a standard that is impossible to meet in terms of just being obsessed with winning. And, you know, McIlroy was supposed to be, you know, the heir apparent with Nike and all that kind of stuff. And obviously it hasn't happened for him. That said, he's still got a bunch of majors and a lot of money.
We got to fly, but when you're golfing and you're on your game, you are zoned in, and I love it.
You're right. You're right about that. I can't fight it. I can't fight it. I roll putts, and
I roll putts.
Hour two of Next Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, and on the TSN app.